Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Dishya hare siya bhava tak pado bhuvo. Baro panitas tava janmani shituhu. Dishyam ti tam twat padakayar sushobhanayar. Drakshyam agam diyam chatavanu kampitam. Drishya hari siya bhava tat pado bhuvo. Bharo panitas tava janmane shitu. Dishyam kitam twat padakayar sushobhanayar. Drakshyam agham diyam chatavanu kompitam. Drishya.
By fortune.
Hare. O Lord. Asya. Of this world. Bhavataha.
Of your lordship.
Padaha.
Of the place.
Bhuvaha.
On this earth.
Badaha. The burden created by the demons. Apanitaha.
Now removed.
Tava.
Of your lordship.
Janmana.
By appearance as an incarnation.
Ishituhu.
You the controller of everything.
Dishya.
And by fortune.
Ankitam.
Marked. Twat
padakai.
By your lotus feet.
Sushobhanai.
Which are transcendentally decorated with the marks of conch shell, disc, lotus, and club.
Drakshyama.
We shall surely observe.
Gam.
Upon this earth.
Dhyamcha.
In heaven also.
Tava anukampitam.
Due to your causeless mercy upon us.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
O Lord, we are fortunate because the heavy burden of the demons upon this earth is immediately removed by your appearance. Indeed, we are certainly fortunate, for we shall be able to see upon this earth and in the heavenly planets the marks of the lotus, conch shell, club and disc that adorn your lotus feet. Purport. The soles of the Lord's lotus feet are marked with Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, conch shell, disc, club and lotus, and also by a flag and a thunderbolt. When Krishna walks on this earth or in the heavenly planets, these marks are visible wherever he goes. Vrindavana Dham is a transcendental place because of Krishna's walking on this land frequently. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were fortunate to see these marks here and there. When Akura went to Vrindavan to take Krishna and Balaram away to the festival arranged by Kamsa, Upon seeing the marks of the lotus feet on the ground of Vrindavan, he fell down and began to groan. These marks are visible to devotees who receive the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tavanu Kompitam. The demigods were jubilant, not only because the appearance of the Supreme Lord would do away with the burdens and demons, but also because they would be able to see upon the ground the transcendental marks from the soles of the Lord's lotus feet. The gopis always thought of the Lord's lotus feet when he was walking in the pasturing grounds. And as described in the previous verse, simply by thinking of the Lord's lotus feet, the gopis were fully absorbed in transcendence. Avishtachita nabhavaya kalpate. That's the previous verse. Like the gopis, one who is always absorbed in thought of the Lord is beyond the material platform and will not remain in this material world. It is our duty, therefore, always to hear, chant, and think about the Lord's lotus feet, as actually done by Vaishnavas, who have decided to live in Vrindavan always and think of the Lord's feet, lotus feet, 24 hours a day. Well, very fortunate Vaishnavas who have decided to live in Vrindavan and think of the Lord's lotus feet 24 hours a day. Other Vaishnavas decide to live in Vrindavan, but they can't do that. So they've got to find something else to do. You can't just sit here idly, just gossiping, reading newspapers, and eating in the MVT. There has to be more to life in Vrindavan. If you can't chant, if you can't remember Krishna's lotus feet 24 hours a day, then you had better find some practical service to be connected with Krishna's lotus feet. Prabhupada says here, it's our duty to always hear, chant, and think about the Lord's lotus feet. We have to take it as a matter of discipline. We're practicing Shravanam Kirtanam, especially, and maybe some Smaranam. A Smaranam is not a mechanical process, it's not a mental process. So you can't really do Smaranam as a external exercise. It really has to come spontaneously. But hearing and chanting, we do. We just do it. We do it as a matter of duty. It is our duty, therefore, to always hear, chant, and think about the Lord. That's our duty. We don't have a spontaneous taste, most of us. Those who foolishly run off to Radhakunda, abandoning their active service, they end up just returning to their material life. We see it so many times. They spend a couple of months there, then they get married and go back to where they came from. So many cases. So it's our duty to hear and chant. We do it even if we don't feel spontaneously attracted to doing it. We take it like medicine. We take a daily dose. Daily dose is 16 rounds a day, counted. Just to be sure that we're actually doing it, we count it. Just like, you can't trust the salesman. The proprietor cannot trust his salesman. So they have to have a cash counter where everybody gets a coupon and then brings the coupon to the counter to get the goods. Because you can't trust the people who are selling the goods. That's the reason why. So like that, we can't trust ourselves that we're actually even chanting. So we have to go to the cash counter, and our counter beads, and register each round that we chant. Get a receipt for each round. It's because we can't even trust ourselves that we're actually doing anything that's actually chanting. So we have to at least, Sankhya Purvaka, chant 16 rounds a day and get the receipts for them. And attend Bhagavatam class. Now these things are minimum for hearing and chanting. This is our sadhana, Vaidhi Bhakti. For someone who doesn't have his natural attraction to serving Krishna is covered over, is frustrated by material considerations, he should take to this Vaiti process. Mayeva mana adhatsva, mudi mayi buddhi niveshaya, mayi nivishesh, nivashishishi mayeva, he answered, ata urvam na samshaya. Just think of me all the time. Fix your intelligence on me, and I'm sure, I guarantee, I promise you, you'll come to me, no problem. Atachittam, Krishna says after that, atachittam samadatum na shaknasi maistidam abhyasa yogena tato mami chaptum dananjaya. So if you can't constantly fix your mind upon me, honestly, you know, you don't be a hypocrite and think that because you're sitting in the holy place, falling asleep, or reading a newspaper, that you're fixing your mind on me. It isn't. It's not fixing your mind on me. You know, you may fix your feet on the holy Dham, but to fix your mind on Krishna is not such an easy thing. We have to be honest. If we can't do it, if we can't just think of Krishna constantly, atachittam samadhatum natshaknosi maistinam abhyasa yogena, then you take to this regulated practice. Chant 16 rounds on beads. Follow the standard sadhana process if you can live in an ashram, or at least follow some sadhana in your home. We take as a promise when we take diksha, we take initiation from our spiritual master. It's not just everyone else is doing it, I have to do it also. I want a name also. I want a name, I want a reputation. Therefore, I also take diksha, but there's responsibilities involved. You're supposed to follow the sadhana, especially the sadhana of hearing and chanting. But there are other things that go along with it. You know, some regulative principles, some regulated regulation of our eating and our sleeping. You know, these things are to make it possible. If we eat things that aren't so much offerable, things cooked by non-devotees, things, you know, cooked just for our own sense gratification, with no thought of pleasing Krishna, that's going to disturb our mind. Irregular eating, eating of things that have not been properly offered, eating of things that have been cooked by people who are not fit to cook for Krishna. This will not allow our mind to be peaceful so that we can actually engage properly in hearing and chanting. And if we sleep too much or not enough, if we're not up at the auspicious times to do our sadhana, then that's also an obstacle in the path of establishing ourselves in the sadhana bhakti. And the sadhana bhakti is for the purpose of awakening our attraction to Krishna. It's for the purpose of awakening our attraction. It's not for anything else. It's not that we've signed a contract and we don't get fed. We don't get paid unless we do something. And we have to chant 16 rounds because that's what we're getting paid for. That's not the program. The program is, it's for our benefit. Krishna's willing to feed us even if we're not chanting. Could you, yeah. Krishna's willing to take care of us. He's been taking care of us for millions of lifetimes. But for the purpose of awakening our attraction to Krishna, we should take this hearing and chanting seriously. The demigods here are talking about Krishna placing his footprints on the surface of the earth. This is Udipana. or a stimulus for awakening remembrance of the Lord. Udipana's sort of a distraction. Yeah. Udipana's serve their purpose, especially in the absence of Krishna. When Krishna has his shoes on his feet, they're just part of his dress. But when Krishna is not present, seeing his feet alleviates the pain of feeling separation by helping us remember him. When we see, when Krishna is not there, and his shoes are there, seeing his shoes remind us of him. And according to what kind of loving feeling we have for Krishna, we get a different experience. When Mother Yashoda sees Krishna's baby shoes, it's different. What she experiences is different from what the gopis see when they see Krishna's shoes in his absence. Okay, well, what does queens see, or what some demons see? You know, what different devotees experience. And then a non-devotee, he'll just see some shoes. It'll mean nothing to him. So the Udipana awakens a love that's already there. Someone who doesn't have any love, the Udipana does nothing for him. And Udipana is effective, especially when in the absence of the Lord. When Krishna's wearing the shoes, it's different. It's when you see the shoes without Krishna, not the shoes with Krishna, that it serves as Udipana. Similarly, the marks of his feet on the surface of the earth, they especially awaken ecstasy in the devotees when they see the marks, but they don't see Krishna. This is the demigods are speaking when Krishna hasn't appeared yet. So it's sort of Purvaraga, but it's anticipation of separation that they're expressing here.
Anticipation of separation.
Because
And he must have seen him already before.
Well, he hasn't appeared on the earth yet. He hasn't appeared yet. He's still sitting in his mother's womb.
But before, once in a day of Brahma he comes, so he must have seen.
It says, we will see the earth marked by your feet. They're anticipating that they're going to see the marks of his feet on the earth. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the more intense you are in devotion, the more you've got to deal with separation. Even though Krishna's with you, if he walks behind a tree, then for 1 second, then you feel intense separation. So, For serious devotees, separation, the experience of separation is a part of life. It can't be avoided. They never have enough of Krishna, and Krishna has to share himself with devotees in different places. So everyone gets adequate opportunity to experience separation. The demigods are anticipating this here. Marks of Krishna's feet on the surface of the earth are significant of Krishna having been there and not being there now. Or being in a particular place on the earth, the forest or someplace where he was walking, and he's not there now. So this is all involved with the feeling of separation. That's why it's such an intense experience to see the marks of Krishna's feet. Oh, he was previously walking through here, and he's not here now. That's what the feeling that those marks, when you see them imprinted on the earth, that's what they invoke. And now they're anticipating that feeling of separation. He hasn't even come yet, and they're anticipating separation from him. This is intense mode of love. Just like in the last chapter, this is toward the beginning of the second chapter of the 10th canto. In the very last chapter, we have the prayers by the queens. Just like a Madhurina Samapayate. We should finish with a special sweet note. So it's like the encore. Mm-hmm. Just a light piece. to finish the concert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a song by the gopis in chapter 90 of the 10th canto. Just like some, you know, the virtuoso violinist at the end of his recital, he'll play some popular song, you know, something to please the audience of the last piece, something, you know, something nice. So this song is given.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing in there is expressing their separation from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cuckoo, you know, have you seen Armada? I don't remember all the things. You know, they're talking to the birds and they're just, you know, talking about how they're missing Krishna. They're missing Krishna, but Krishna's sleeping in their beds right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the middle of the night, Krishna's in their bedrooms, and they're talking about separation from Krishna. This is intensity of ecstasy. The devotees are feeling separation from Krishna when he's physically present with them. Yeah, it's totally irrational, but that's the intensity of you know, the point, the extent to which love of Krishna can go. So that's being expressed at the end of the 10th canto, and there's an echo of it here in this prayer, in the beginning of the 10th canto. You know, it's a theme of the Bhagavatam, is the how devotees experience the highest intensities of love of God when they're separated from Krishna. Okay, any questions or comments? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It said that, I mean, in witnessing the activity of human beings are the sun, the moon, the devatas, air, and so on. But did they get an opportunity to witness Krishna's activities?
Sure. You can read the description of the Ras dance, how the moon is, you know, and the other demigods are in the sky watching. I don't know if the sun was there in the middle of the night, but the moon was taking full advantage of the opportunity to see. Yes.
Because
moon and sun. It says, what is it? Brahma prays that us 10 principal demigods are able to enjoy Krishna's pastimes through the senses of the Vrajbasis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through we're drinking this nectar through these cups. Those cups are the senses, the rishikas of the Vrajbasis, the controlling demigods who get to, you know, operate the sense organs of the different of all the living entities. They're taking the opportunity through the senses of the Vrajbasis who are there with Krishna to experience Krishna's pastimes. Other demigods, they come in person. Sun and the moon, they're there all the time up in the sky. So they're taking advantage of the opportunity they see, and they're taking full advantage of that opportunity.
Someone was mentioning once in Mayapur that the sun in Mayapur is different. I mean, it's not the normal sun.
It's not the same sun?
I mean, in the sense that in the transcendental world, I mean, that because Mayapur and Vraj are different.
I don't understand what that's supposed to mean. Maybe I just don't catch it. The Mayapur that you were sitting in when you heard that is Mayapur manifested on the earth.
Right.
And I think the sun you were looking at is the same sun that we're looking at here, and then even if you stopped the train at you know, at Mughalai Sarai and got out and looked at the sun, it would be the same sun.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, it's something I don't know about.
Present, you know,
yeah. Those are different sun and moon.
We don't need
in
them
the spiritual
there.
Sky.
Yeah. We don't need them there, but Deva doesn't surely come in their spiritual form or something, just to give us service.
Yeah.
We don't need the sun.
That wasn't Padmalocha who said that.
It's just some devotee.
Okay. The Holy Dhamma is not different than the spiritual world, but it's still got the same equipment of the material world. It's, you know, it's in the material world and it's transcending the material, but it's, I don't think that there's a separate, different sun here. You know, if there was, we could ask them to change the weather. Yeah. Problem, we're using the same sun and the same atmosphere as they're using in Haryana and in Delhi, yeah. And therefore we're getting all this heavy weather.
Yeah. As far as I understand. The sun is the same.
Yes.
The sun is the same, but since it is a celestial place,
yes.
So the devotee think as such.
Okay. But we have to, you know, I don't think there's a Shastric statement that it's not the same son. Yeah.
It's just like devotee wants to feel that. Is that how it is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's experience. Being experienced is different, you know, for us it's different, you know, but I think that's just a subjective thing. Okay. They're just feeling like that.
Like we were just relishing a beautiful sunset. The devotees were saying that this is.
Oh, okay, well, that's poetic. Like they're being poetic. Okay.
They also see sunrise also there.
Yes.
People look there and see the sunrise also.
Yes. Yes.
Can you say a few more words about the statement that smaranam is not the mechanical process?
It's not even a mental process. It's not done with the mind. Not real smaranam. I mean, you can think about Krishna, but that's not smaranam.
So what is smaranam?
Smaranam has to come from the awakened heart. It's like tuning in to a broadcast. You know, if you think about the television show you saw yesterday, it's not the same thing as turning the TV set on seeing today's program. Yeah. You know, so smaranam is like turning on the TV and watching the show. You actually see the broadcast of the spiritual world. That's smaranam.
In a case like when you see something that's happening normally, and then if you, like, let's say you see a beautiful sunrise, Sunday, you remember Krishna, I mean, you remember something there in the Brahma Samhita. Is that smaranam? And then you...
No, there's a problem there with the use of the word. It's not ordinary smaranam. It's not just, you know, bringing up impressions from the mind, from things you experienced before.
No, I don't mean like that.
Well, you see something, and then
like you see a beautiful sunrise, and then you suddenly, you know, I mean, it's like you spontaneously think about Krishna saying, "Yet chakshuresh savita," and so on, and then you feel
that's a momentary experience of smaranam. Okay, that's valid, a glimpse, but the smaranam itself is supposed to be practiced as a real smaranam is constant. That's not achieved until you attain prema. Even in the stage of bhava, you can only remember sporadically.
So it's some kind of a being deep in the meditation, it's like it's
some
kind of, I don't know, just
some
deep of samadhi, like all this.
It sort of is, yes, it is. Real smaranam is. We practice it. We can practice. You know, the practice can be done with the mind. But we always have to remember we're not actually doing it yet. Mm-hmm. You know, just like you can ride a bicycle with trainer wheels, but you know, until you know how to do it right, don't take the wheels off or you'll fall down.
Because Baba, you always advocate this, you know, like smile and you always remember.
Right, but they actually don't have the adhikar to do it constantly. That's the main fault in their practice, is that they're prematurely trying to do smaranam. Smaranam is not a mental exercise. You can use some mental exercises to help stimulate it, but it's not actual smaranam. Smaranam has to be a spontaneously awakening from the heart of actual direct experience of Krishna. If I'm right? Mm-hmm.
No, but you see, Baba is doing so many things, including smoking, yelling, fighting, and doing bad things, stepping each other, just because you're not real, you know what they do.
Yeah,
the use of you criticizing others and fighting and going for functions.
Yes.
They just busy remembering, they don't busy. Look at Baba Baba, they're always busy doing something, just trying to fill the blanks of spiritual activities.
Yes. Yes.
You know, Baba meditating, they just half an hour a day maximum.
But we may wonder, all that we have no contact, we have no opportunity, you know, we don't fit to do any smaranam at all. But we can practice the mental reflection of smaranam. Even our chanting, if you really want to be critical about it, our chanting is just practice of chanting. You know, we don't have any attraction, and we're chanting with offenses and this and that. You know, or we're just chanting, you know, namabhas. So you could say philosophically, we're not even really chanting. Yeah, that's a little harsh to think like that. It's harsh on ourselves. In the same way, you can analyze we're not doing it, we can't do any real smaranam, but we can practice it. We're practicing chanting, even though we have no were chanting offensively for a couple of years, and then we're chanting with Namabhas for another few decades, and then who knows when we'll ever actually really chant. But we're practicing. Same thing, you can practice Smaranam. And you use your mind for that. But the real Smaranam won't come from the mind, it'll come from the heart. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. That's okay. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.